welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line. This is Bob Pittman, and I'm glad to have you with us. We try each week to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problem. Of course, I wouldn't be an attorney if I didn't have a disclaimer or limitation of damage clause attached to the program. You have to get up kind of close to see it, but if you do, it'll tell you that damages resulting from advice given on this program strictly limited to what you paid for the advice. Wouldn't you know it? Leave it to the lawyers to come up with this stuff, and we do. We do indeed. Well, you're listening to us right here on the Legal Line Network, and you can catch us each and every Wednesday, 3 p.m. Pacific time at bobpittman.com. So be sure to stop by and listen live. You can also give us a call during the program and ask a question, of course, 253-471-9694. Of course, email your question to Jeff, J-E-F-F, Jeff at bobpittman.com during the week, and we'll see if we can't get your question on the air. And, of course, then we become a Bobcast. So by tomorrow, this program will be up permanently as a Bobcast, or some people might call them podcasts, but, of course, to us, they're Bobcasts. I wonder why. I don't know. At any rate, be sure to tune in each and every week and check out the podcast. Last week, was a fun one. And I lawyers use the word fun a lot of times, and I'm not sure that other people would use the word fun, but it was a really interesting interview of the attorney Mark Prothero, who represented the Green River Killer, defended the Green River Killer. Can you imagine? So be sure to, if you missed that one, be sure to stop by the Legal Line archives and listen to the interview with Mark Prothero. Interesting fellow, and a lot of good discussion about criminal defense, criminal law, and, of course, the Green River Killer. He's got a great book out, Defending Gary, and we have a link up to it at the podcast or Bobcast, so be sure to check that out, too. Makes a great holiday gift. We got Christmas coming up, Kwanzaa. We've got Hanukkah coming up, all kinds of fun stuff. Those are definitely fun things, even for lawyers. And so take a look at the reading list. We've got a lot of interesting books. We keep working on it, and it is a work in progress. So check out the reading list. You may find that there's a helpful book. You know, the way I like to use self-help books is not necessarily that you're going to do it yourself, but you're going to learn a lot about the subject. And so if you're dealing, for example, with a neighbor law question. It's a popular topic. If it is, there's a great book called Neighbor Law. If there's something about estate planning, there are a couple of good books. One I like is Plan Your Estate by Dennis Clifford. Kind of a neat overall general book about estate planning. There's also Understanding Living Trusts. If you have an interest in living trusts, that's a great book by Vicki Schumacher, also a very nice person, who wrote that book, and that's available sometimes in the library, so be sure to check your public library and see if it isn't on or available for loan, I guess, on the shelf. But give them a call first, check in with them first before you spend the gas to go over and check, because sometimes they have to grab it from another library. So each week we like to take some questions. We have guests from time to time. Got some fun guests coming up in future weeks. But let's see, I believe we had a couple of questions come in, and maybe Diane can help us out here. A couple of questions that came in during the week. So am I remembering correctly?
You are, and I have a quick question. This reminds me of it. But Jim in West Seattle wants to know what he can do about a neighbor's tree. It overhangs his property and dumps leaves all over his side yard. His neighbor just laughs about it and said he's going to charge him for the leaves, compost and all.
Oh, of course. You know, that's, like you can go to Starbucks and they're not leaves, but you can get the little packages of,
coffee grounds,
I guess. Yeah, old coffee grounds and stuff, and they don't charge for those. I don't know about the neighbor wanting them to charge them, but ouch. You know, that's a problem. I think we all have neighbor issues that come up from time to time. And, ordinarily they're resolved amicably. Now, if you look at the situation, of course, it varies state to state. And here in Washington, though, you can be causing what's known as a private nuisance if you have a tree dumping leaves all over a neighbor's property. You can end up on the other side of a private nuisance claim, and we've had success in the past in Washington in going against a neighbor. Now, I'm not a big fan of going against the neighbor because you got to live there. Unless you're moving out right away, you're gonna get through this legal issue at some point, and the neighbor is probably still gonna be there, and you're gonna see the neighbor. If not daily, then certainly from time to time. So I'm a big believer in trying to resolve things way short of litigation. Sometimes mediation can help. Sometimes going into one of the dispute resolution centers that a lot of the counties have here in Washington can help. But from the legal side, if you have a neighbor's tree, clearly a neighbor's tree that's just dumping junk all over your property, then the neighbor, technically is, as I say, entered the area of a private nuisance, and you would have a claim against the neighbor for the cost of cleanup. Do I recommend that you actually go and sue the neighbor? No, I don't. I don't like to do that. You could try trimming the tree back to the property line is something that can work. You've got to be really careful. You have the right here in Washington to trim back to the property line. You have to be really careful. Make sure you know your property line. But with the caveat that you do not want to be destroying the tree or killing the tree. If you do that, you're going to be liable for some costs in terms of the value of the tree. So you don't want to be damaging the tree, at least to the point where the tree is going to die on us. So you've got to be awfully cautious. When you get into trimming, it's good, I think, to have a professional, some kind of a tree service, an arborist perhaps come in if it's a major undertaking. But of course, we're talking about costing a few bucks in order to do that. But how about talking to the neighbor? And of course, in this case, the neighbor just laughs about it. And I guess the thing I would do is say, it's all a big laugh, and you want to be careful not to escalate it into something awful. But, kind of join in with the neighbor and say, yeah, that's great, of course. But it really is kind of a pain. What can we do? Can we maybe trim back on both sides so the tree ends up looking okay? You can see kind of a weird tree sometimes maybe where you've trimmed it and it's just one ugly tree. I've seen a lot of ugly trees, it seems like, lately. But, doesn't mean we tear the trees down? Probably not. So talk to the neighbor. Think about trimming back, getting an arborist in. If, in fact, it just dumps and dumps and the neighbor won't do anything, won't help you, then you can consider maybe doing the mediation through one of the local mediation services. Worst case, I suppose, you're talking about suing on a private nuisance theory. But, again, I'm really not a big fan of suing on private nuisance with a neighbor.
My girlfriend had a neighbor with a cottonwood tree, and they worked it out so that they cut it down. But that was a mess.
I'll bet it was. That's and it really is hard. And a lot of times, in this case, obviously, there's been some conversation going on between the neighbors. And so we know we've got maybe a little bit of trouble. But a lot of times the neighbors, don't really know that there's a problem and are happy to try and help rectify the problem and solve the problem if you bring it to their attention in a really nice way. And, this time of year is not a bad one to be taking the cookies over next door to the neighbor. Of course, now we'll have another question. The call will come in. Well, what if I bake cookies and the cookies turn out to be bad and the people get sick? What do we do then? Well, we'll leave that to a different program. So maybe you want to get the store-bought ones. I kind of hate to have to go to store-bought, though.
Well, the other thing is you have to be living good, because when that big rain windstorm came through, all our leaves blew. And the other neighbor, it was their tree, but all the leaves blew their way. So
that's true. The wind was blowing
in our favor.
In our favor. The winds were great that night. Although, yes. What about a fence coming
down?
That's
what my next question is. My own personal question is, our fence blew over and it fell in the neighbor's yard. And I lived in the house, but I don't know whose fence it is. Yeah. And they're not moving to fix it. And and I know they're rental there.
Right.
So what do you do?
Well, it's hard to know who owns the fence sometimes, because people have come and gone, and You can try to guess at it, and maybe, you know, one neighbor will know whose fence it is. But when we get into things, and even with a tree blowing down, you get into an act of God. And there isn't really liability typically on the part of one of the neighbors when something like a tree, or in this case a fence, blows down. An exception would be with a tree that is clearly diseased and is a problem. If you let the neighbor know, let's say you have an arborist or somebody come out, a tree surgeon, I don't know, a general practitioner come out and examine the tree, and the arborist or the tree specialist says, you know, this tree is diseased and it's bad off and it's going to come down one day. If you let the neighbor know, and here's where you do it in a verbally and maybe a nice writing of some sort, maybe a confirming letter after you talk about it verbally. But if you let the neighbor know, now it's on them. And in fact, their insurance company isn't going to want to cover them either. And if that tree comes down now, after you've put them on notice legitimately that there's a problem, then the neighbor does have responsibility. And so I suppose if you, I don't know, if you had a, with a fence, if it's the neighbor's fence, and it blows down, if it comes over into your property and damages something, I think we're in the act of God again area. I suppose if it's real, if the fence is all damaged and you let them know, maybe you could argue that since they didn't replace it and the fence came down and damaged something on your property, maybe you would have a claim against the neighbor. But that's kind of and when you've got a rental, that's another issue. I mean, what do you do? Because the tenants aren't really in a position usually to fix it. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they have an agreement where the landlord has to do all that kind of stuff. And so it may be that at some point one wants to contact the neighbor, the actual owner of the property, and say, you know, had a fence come down and it kind of looks like it might be your fence. What do you think? All right. Too much fun.
Yes. Well, we have a question from Susan in Spokane. With the end of the year approaching, she wants to make gifts to her grandchildren for education.
Oh.
What are the limits, and what might she do with the money?
Oh, good question. Well, you know, general limits on gifts are the $13,000 limit. So any of us can give any number of people $13,000 each year, per year, without any kind of a gift tax. And the tax that Susan is, whether she knows it or not, is thinking about it, is the gift tax. So the IRS, Congress, I shouldn't blame the IRS. The IRS is just carrying out the rules of Congress. But Congress says, you know, we don't want people to be able to give away too much because then there might not be enough left over for the estate tax, or maybe they're shifting the amount over so they don't pay as much income tax. So we're going to just say you can give away so much. And it used to be $10,000 for a long time. Then it started creeping up. We're now up to $13,000. So number one, you can give anybody you want a total of $13,000 during a year, and there's no issue. They don't have to pay tax on the receipt of it. You don't have to pay gift tax. It's just a good, clean thing, and it reduces the size of your estate. Now, when you're dealing with educational stuff, I always would suggest to people, look at some of the options, especially when we have younger children. Look at the options of a Uniform Transfers to Minors Act account. That's an account you can set up for a child, a grandchild in this case, and put money in. You could put up to the $13,000 a year into that account, and the child can't get their hands on it until a specified age. And you can go out as far now as age 25. Years ago, it was age 18, then they changed it to 21. It's still typically 21, but our statutes now allow you to specify age 25, which is really neat in terms of gumming up the money so that the kids can't just grab the money and run at 18 or 21. So Uniform Transfers to Minors Act account. And it can be used, though, before that age for things like education. Now, you can also do one of these new plans called a 529 plan. They're available, I believe, in almost every state. And you don't have to be in the particular state to use that state's 529 plan. But you're allowed to give up to the $13,000. You can actually do 5 years all at once. So 5 times 13, I think, is still $65,000. a grandparent could put aside $65,000 all at once into a 529 plan, which is for education of the grandchild. And when the grandchild takes the money out, if in fact it's for, or you take the money out for them, if in fact it's used for education, then it comes out income tax free, all the growth. So it's a neat little program that's available. In Washington, our version of it are these little tuition credits. I think they call them GETs. I should remember what that, guaranteed education something. Anyway, but it's basically you're buying units, credits and so forth for the for tuition at a Washington State college or university. I kind of like the idea of not doing that, but going to one of the states where you just build up an account. Because we don't really know whether the kids are going to go to a Washington school or not. And admittedly, you can use the money at a different school, but I think it's just cleaner, in my opinion, to grab one of the states where you just build an account, you invest the money, and the money's available then later for education. And it could be switched to another child if it turns out that the one child doesn't end up going to school and using the money. Another thing you can do is if they're in school, and it could be any kind of a school, virtually without restriction. I'm sure I could come up with a restriction or two if we really tried. But if you write the checks directly to the institution, let's say for the tuition, then you can also give the $13,000. Now, the child or the grandchild will be really interested in this. This is a way to get more than the $13,000. So your grandparents can pay your tuition and give you $13,000 a year, and there's no gift tax. You can also do that for medical expenses if you pay the bill directly to the medical, the hospital, let's say, or the doctor. If you're paying those, you can pay someone's medical bills if you pay them directly to the provider and not incur the wrath of the gift tax and still give the person the $13,000. Sometimes medical expenses can exceed the $13,000, and tuition and things like that can certainly exceed the $13,000, so they made an exception for those two areas. Finally, you can use a form of an irrevocable trust. If you're talking about money that's really beyond the scope of a Transfers to Minors Act account, you know, where you want to have that much money available to the child at 25, or direct payments for tuition, or the 529 plan, then you need to think in terms of setting up an irrevocable trust that can be designed to help that grandchild throughout their lifetime. So that's another option as well. Good question. So be sure to send your questions in to Jeff at jeff@bobpittman.com. You can send comments if you have a suggestion on a program topic. We got some fun ones in the works that will be coming up in coming weeks, and so you'll want to keep an eye out for those. Always check the Bobcast or podcasts at bobpittman.com. Now, a great holiday gift, whether it's Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, is Jim Stovall's new book, A Christmas Snow. Now, it is on our reading list, so be sure to check that out. That's a great gift. It comes in book form, and it also comes in DVD form. They've actually made a movie. Jim Stovall's made a movie. And if you want to hear Jim Stovall's comments, he was our guest a few weeks ago, and so you can find the Bobcast of Jim Stovall in their searchable archives, the Legal Line archives. Whenever you go to bobpittman.com, you just grab onto that Legal Line link at the top, and then you'll see your choices along with the reading list and be able to pick up a copy of A Christmas Snow as a great gift for Christmas, Kwanzaa, or Hanukkah. You know, I was over at Starbucks the other day, and I'm pretty sure I saw a Kwanzaa card. It looked kind of fun. I don't think I'd seen one. Maybe it's not the first year that they've had that, but that was kind of fun. So Starbucks cards I'm doing an ad for Starbucks all of a sudden. How'd I end up doing that? Go to your independent coffee maker, too. We're not trying to necessarily promo Starbucks. But quick comment on a neat website, washingtonlawhelp.org. We'll do a little more of a discussion on an upcoming program about washingtonlawhelp.org. Terrific website. You can find all kinds of answers to questions on family law, debt issues, consumer problems, domestic violence, health, elder law. They've got some great information at that website. It's a kind of a sleeper. I mean, some people know about it, but a lot of people don't. And it's just a terrific website. If you go to our blog, you'll find some comments about the Terry Schiavo case from a few weeks ago. The blog from a few weeks ago, Terry Schiavo, of course, that case was several years ago. And if you recall, she was from Florida, and she's the one who was ended up being in that persistent vegetative state, and there was a fight between among family members over whether to disconnect her or not. Terrible, terrible case, awful situation. So if you want to make sure you don't end up as another Terry Schiavo case, you want to make sure that you have your living will or health care directive in place to say what you would want done if you're ever in one of those awful conditions. Washington State now has a living will registry. This is terrific, and it's free. I like the price. It's free. But if you look for our blog on the Terry Schiavo case, you're going to find a link to the living will registry. There is a form that you fill out, and you then fax or send in your living will. They will keep it on file, and it'll be available if and when you need it. Now, along with your other health care documents, so your health care power of attorney, durable power of attorney for health care, and, in fact, if you have one of those POLST forms, P-O-L-S-T forms, that's physician orders for life-sustaining treatment, any of that can go into this file, Living Will Registry, which can be accessed when it's needed. So you don't have to try to search for the forms. I really like that. So take a look and find the website reference. We'll try to get it up on our links page, too, in a few days. But it is in the blog that I did recently on the Terry Schiavo situation and the use of a living will. You can also get your very own form of living will right there at the website, print it up, fill it out, have people sign it. The one catch on signing the living wills, of course, is that the witnesses need to be so-called disinterested witnesses. Kind of makes sense in a way, because people are witnessing a living will. That means that you could end up dying a little sooner than you might otherwise, and so we don't want those witnesses to be people who are entitled to your estate or healthcare providers or people that have some interest, arguably some interest in your living or dying. And so we want disinterested witnesses when it comes to a living will. It requires two. There are lots of other things that you can look at in terms of living wills. There's the five wishes document that you can find by going to agingwithdignity.org. That's not a bad one either. Hey, we're looking at doing some remote broadcasts, remote bobcasts, I guess, maybe at some community events, so you want to stay tuned and listen in for where we might be, where you'll actually be able to come and listen to the program and ask questions and have a little fun on the site. So we're working on a couple of remote broadcasts at this time. Probably will be after the first of the year rather than the end of the year, because it's getting pretty jammed up here as we move towards the end of this year. So I want to thank everybody for being with us today. Really appreciate your taking time. And if you've stopped by to listen to us as a bobcast, welcome. We hope you'll come back and listen again. You can always find us right here at bobpittman.com. This is Bob Pittman for the Legal Line Network. We'll see you soon.